it was pretty unique interaction that I had with Brother Scott. In 2007, you might remember that one of the first YouTube videos that went viral was the Free Hugs video. And here we were, him and I commenting on the video. Like, I don't do that anymore, but that I did that time, and it really touched me, a comment that he wrote. And then I replied to that comment. And I don't know how it happened that he replied maybe 3 years after that. And then I wrote, and I was, oh, that's incredible. And then I replied another 3 years later. That's 2007, the first interaction. And then the second interaction was in 2010. And then I never checked my YouTube inbox, right? So in 2013, that's 3 years after his reply, I look at it and it's like, wow, well, brother, it seems that we're having these conversations, these interactions every 3 years. So maybe I will wait for your reply for 2016. And he said, well, I don't think we need to wait that longer. And it was just incredible, that part of walking the talk or embodying kindness, embodying self-service, just as simple as using the electron land to put a positive comment. And I remember the Free Hugs, someone was negative about these kind of Free Hugs, and we know how viraling went and how incredible one feels these mirror neurons when you see this brother being embraced by the little, you know, warm grandma with a giant heart, and then all of a sudden the video just light up with colors, and then everybody start hugging each other, and it just went like, he's like, whoa, I want to start hugging everybody. And then, you know, the movement, how spread out. But to know that in the very early stages, there is this person that I don't know, and he's in the electron lab putting this sweet comment just to transform thy hatred and thy violence into something kind. It really touched me. And then just going further and further, and I'm just learning a lot of more of that magic that he is. And here we are. Finally, we are meeting in another dimension of the electron land. And so I'm very happy, you know, to be inspired by the forest farmers that have been holding this space. And now that we are, I mean, if you ask my grandpa 100 years ago, do you think that, I don't know how many people, like 20 people will be calling from different parts of the planet and will be interacting in real time at the same time? I don't know. He would say yes. Maybe, I don't know. And here we are sharing this love. So if I'm dead tomorrow, or if I'm not able to connect with you in different ways, I'd like you all to know that I love you all. And that this is so wonderful to be sharing space-time in this marvelous pale blue organic pearl flying space. So thank you.
Fantastic.
That's great.
Thank you, Pancho. We all love you too. And it's not been 3 years yet, so yay! Okay, Moni, do you want to take it away?
Well, you know, yeah, why don't we just get started on the interview, right?
Sure,
the conversation with Scott? Okay. Sure. I'm calling in from Ottawa, as you probably all know. I'm Moni, and it is my great delight today to speak with Scott, another pilgrim on this journey of life that we all share. And for those of you who may not know, Scott is spelled S-C-A-U-G-H-T, and I was curious as to why, and we'll get into all that maybe a little bit later on. But I wanted to give just a little bit of background on Scott, that he calls himself a numinous nomad, a term which I must admit I had never heard before, and that I quite like, because it's interesting. He calls himself numinous because it's his intention to bring light and the light of inner peace to all those he touches. And he's a nomad because he has no home of his own. Basically, Scott goes from community to community. He just shares a message of unconditional acceptance and radical compassion. He has no material possessions. He's pretty much given away or thrown away all those all those things that he feels he no longer needs. He has no money. He accepts no money for his services. And it's an amazing story, an incredible way to live. And some of the things that we wanted to talk about, I think, have already been kind of touched on. Scott, are you there,
Hello.
First of all? Hello there.
I'm here. I really enjoyed the circle of sharing. I made great notes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of really wonderful things were said. I enjoyed that immensely.
So did I, actually. I made some notes along the way. And I realized that we didn't ask you the same question that we have asked everyone else. You didn't get a chance to answer that question. So if you would like to take this moment now to answer that question about, you know, the things about, you know, the things that you find easy in walking the talk and the areas in which you struggle and how you try to overcome those struggles.
Yeah, sure, of course. I mean, that's really what it all boils down to. For all of us, I guess, right? What we're going to do with the ego or the reptile brain, or you know, how we can access the soul or the higher consciousness when we're programmed to not, you know, we're programmed to look out for ourselves first. And I guess that is the basic challenge for me and always will be, I believe, personally, for all of us, simply because that's the way our brains are built. Our reptile brains always respond with fight or flight to every encounter a quarter of a second before our consciousness even can turn on. So unless we learn to pause and practice pausing and choosing, we are programmed to do and actualize self-interest. Sometimes it's not malicious, sometimes it's harmless, but it's still self-interest. And I'm human, and I've got a reptile brain. Thank heavens, or my heart would stop beating, right? And my reptile brain is very efficient at getting me to continue to subconsciously want to take care of myself first and everybody else second. And it is a constant challenge to pause and say, okay, I've just been droning on in my job for the last 3 hours, and instead of getting down on myself, I get to say, okay, but now I'm back, and for the next 5 minutes, I'm going to be conscious, and I'm going to do something radically crazy kind, or just smile at a coworker, or bring someone a coffee, or pick up some garbage that I see on the sidewalk. It can be anything. It just has to be a constant return to consciousness. And I think that is the challenge of challenges. I think all the other challenges we have, hatred, jealousy, fear, sadness, anger, they all come from that. And so even though I've been doing this for 9 years, the first 8.5 years of it radically, as you mentioned, with no home, which I still technically don't have, and with no possessions, which I do have a few now, mm-hmm. and with no money, which now I have a little bit, which we can talk about a little later. The challenge was always there, and it always will be. You know, how do I get back to transcending instinct and becoming a conscious human being, as opposed to merely a Homo sapiens? Right. So, I mean, that's what it's about, I think.
Mm-hmm. If I'm hearing you correctly, then you're saying that you try to consciously find the smallest opportunity to return to that higher place and to act from that place.
Not always the smallest. I mean, I like to say I take the one that falls in my lap. You know, for years it was like I have to do something big, and it was noble. You know, we all want to do something big to bring the shift, and we want to lead a march to Selma, and you know, we love humanity, we want to effectuate the big change, and the only challenge with that is the ego latches onto that, and it allows us to become frustrated with ourselves because, you know, those are callings that are, for many of us, few and far between. The Peace Pilgrim herself said, you know, most of us don't have to worry about martyring for the cause because a martyr is a rare honor bestowed on few. But we still can, quote-unquote, pick up our cross every day by just doing what falls in our lap. You know, is a coworker have a scowl on his face? Say something kind. Did someone drop their wallet? Pick it up and run after them. You know, is someone looking a little down? Give them a compliment. So it's not always looking for the small thing. It's looking for the thing that's right there. Yeah. And that is what I keep reminding myself of. Because I slip into all day, every day, I slip into to thoughts of finding my job exceptionally boring, or you know, I'm a human too, and so I have people in my life that just somehow don't resonate with me, and I can just look at them, and they're just like, oh my God, you know, you just get kind of annoyed, you know, it just happens. It happens to all of us. It happened to Gandhi. It happened to Jesus. It happened to everybody.
Yeah.
And it's what we do with those people that makes the life meaningful. And then I get to keep catching myself and saying, okay, you're annoyed, and now is your chance to do something really powerful because you're annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then as opposed to making my failings or my weaknesses the enemy, I make them my friends.
Right. So in a way,
that is a really empowering mindset for me. That's made things a lot more effective for me.
Yeah, in a way, that the people who are in front of you, those who annoy you, or those who bring out, shall we call it, you know, in quotation marks, the worst in you, are your greatest healers and your greatest teachers, the greatest opportunity to really heal that within yourself.
Right. I made a note on that somewhere. I mean, all these the wonderful people who said these wonderful things, and one of my notes was related to that. I mean, those are the angels.
Exactly.
You know, those are the folks that. It was the person from Maine. I didn't catch the name.
Mm-hmm.
That you have to know where you're coming from and talk about the difficult people. And boy, I know about that. Who doesn't? And yet just reminding yourself, maybe once a day, maybe once a week, that those are the people that give you the chance to do love powerfully. We're all good at being nice to people we like. And keep doing that, by all means. Heavens. Keep being nice to people who you like. And the challenge is, can you be kind? Which is being nice to people you quote-unquote don't like, or people who are being mean to you, or people who annoy you. And that's what brings the great change. That's what's so irrational that it just shakes the world up when you do it. So, and without those people, which we are to others, by the way, you know, I annoy other people too, okay? I'm a blessing like that to others too. So, but without those people, it's just too easy. We can't have powerful change without there being difficulty. So,
right. How can you grow if you're not being forced to kind of push?
Exactly.
Exactly.
And so looking at my fear, some other beautiful caller mentioned fear, being challenged with fear. Boy, do I know about that. Who doesn't? And fear is another one of those enemies, where as opposed to fighting my fear, every time I feel my fear, I say, oh, thank you, fear. Thank you. I don't want you anymore. But you know you're going to come, and now while I'm afraid, I get to do something courageous that is going to have some meaning and some power because I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden fear becomes the ally, and you're not afraid anymore, and then there you go, and it's just gone. Yeah. And the same thing with pain and illness and fatigue. All these things we can pause and say, okay, I'm exhausted, and I just want to curl up in the fetal position and make a mocha and watch television, and that's fine if you do. And you can also say, I'm exhausted, and because I'm exhausted, I'm going to make my fatigue an ally. I'm going to get up, and I'm going to go do the smallest good deed for somebody else while I'm exhausted. And all of a sudden, because of your fatigue, that good deed blows the roof off of that deed. And then this mentality just changes. It changes everything. It's beyond. It's just wonderful. It's changed everything for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. We jumped into this conversation so quickly. I'm not sure if people really know where you got your name from. And I understand.
Oh yeah, right.
The
That's kind of a little. It's almost a silly story, but those are sometimes the best ones.
they are.
You know, I was back around. I was. You know, our whole life is an awakening, really. It's easy to see when you look back. It's almost impossible to see when you're right in the middle of it. But, you know, I look back at my life and I think, oh, right, you know, I was dissatisfied there and that led me to seek here. But my seeking for some sort of capital M meaning became really acute around 2001, 2002. I started thinking, okay, there's got to be more of this gig. And I just will never be really at peace until I find it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing all of this. I did some feng shui and some tai chi, and I was doing all this new age stuff, which is wonderful stuff, by the way. I loved it. It all served its purpose. And one of the things I decided, I realized that inside each one of us there is the ego, for lack of a better word, that, you know, reasonably fears and reasonably wants you to look out for yourself. And there is the conscience or the soul or the spirit or the true self that requires, you know, some courage and some selflessness. And there's always these two selves, and we have to choose in each moment which one we're going to feed or which one we're going to let out. And I really wanted to let more of the selfless guy out, and I was having a lot of trouble doing it. And so I thought if I changed my name, then every time I wrote my name or somebody said my name, I would remind myself immediately that, oh, right, you're being that guy now. Mm. Small S. Scott had 35 years and more power to him, but now Big S. Scott is gonna come out. And so the reason why I changed the spelling like that, I was born Scott, just, you know, S-C-O-T-T, and I still am that guy. He's a good guy. It's selfish, but he was a good guy. But I really had a feeling that if I changed my name to, like, Zagron or, who knows, something else crazy that would have effectively reminded me of my true self, it would have freaked my mother out, to be honest. So I decided to find a way to spell it creatively that would sound the same.
Yeah.
And I fooled around with the letters. There's a D in there, too, by the way. It's S-C-A-U-G-H-D-T.
Oh, that's right. You're right.
Because I was playing with numerological archetypes and Carl Jung at the time, and I needed a 4, so I threw a D in there. which is cool, because it apparently is the only Scott with a D in it on the planet right now, which is that's kind of neat.
Congratulations.
Yeah, right on. Not that that's important, but that is the story behind the name, and it's done good things. If it's not broken, don't fix it, right? So I'm
Absolutely.
Still Scott.
Excellent. Well, very nice to meet both Scotts.
Yeah, right on. Hello.
Hello. Well, it's funny you mentioned that it's almost as if you kind of have the Scott that is perhaps more ego, and the Scott that is coming from some higher consciousness. I must ask, do you consider ego Scott your friend? Have you befriended
Oh, yeah. You got to do that. I tried to beat that guy up and suppress that guy and tell him he was dead. You know, there's even writings on that, kill your ego, and, you know, right. Good luck, folks. I mean, you can't do it. The more, because the ego thrives on judgment and insecurity and fear. That's all it understands.
Right.
The reptile brain doesn't have any equipment to understand love and selflessness. It sees those things as threats and potential deaths. And labels them as bad. That's all it knows, God bless it. It only knows self-interest. So if you're going to attack it, that's something that it thrives on. And you can suppress the ego for a while, but all you're really doing is getting it to be stronger, which
right.
I think we've all experienced. It'll just come back with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you know, you're not really paying attention, and boom, it just explodes out of you. These sentences of selfishness or these actions, you're like, wait a minute, I tried to get rid of you. And like with any addiction, which we all face, I just wrote a book about that. It's pretty cool. It's already on my blog. If you go to my website, you can access the addiction book. All the entries are on my blog right now. But facing ego and addiction is the same process I've found. You have to love the enemy. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it's a patent truth. And as soon as you look at the ego and say, okay, buddy, thank you, always start with gratitude.
Yes.
Thank you for keeping me alive when I was an infant, because I would have died without you. I'd gone crazy. Thank you for protecting me in adolescence. And thank you for trying to protect me now, even though you're doing it in a poor way. and then the next thing I like to do is I talk to my ego like this all the time, because it listens. And so you thank it first. You recognize that it's doing its best in its job. And then you say, don't worry, I'm not going to be selfless forever. I'm not going to turn into a quote-unquote saint. I might sin tomorrow. I might be selfish in 5 minutes. But just right now, just for this one action, I'm going to do something a little crazy and selfless and kind.
Mm-hmm.
And just relax, because it's only for now.
Right.
And then the ego relaxes.
It's
because
true.
There is no vow to do this forever, and there is no I'm gonna never have the steering wheel in my hands again, because all I want to do is drive. You know, the ego, that's all I want to do.
Right.
And so you put it in the back seat and say, just 5 minutes. Just sit there for 5 minutes.
Yeah. And
it sits there for 5 minutes. And over time, it starts to feel how great it feels to do these crazy kind things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to give you more of a break.
Yeah.
And it starts to get more in the backseat on its own.
Yeah. And I think that that is the beauty of doing it exactly that way, of using love, not only to kind of to assuage the ego, but in a way to also give it an opportunity to feel what the other extreme of its self is. Because the other extreme of selfish is selfless. And
right
so in feeling that, in a way, you are healing that aspect of yourself as well and allowing more of its light to become more prevalent. And so
there
I think that's the beauty, yeah. That I totally agree with you there because I use the same thing. That's my talking to myself. It's nice to know there are others like who are like me as well doing the same thing. But it's that exact idea. You're not trying to beat the ego down. You're trying to use love to bring it closer to the light that it naturally is.
Well, and without the ego making love difficult, you know, we would experience no peace or bliss. I mean, we need it to be difficult.
Yeah.
For it to have meaning and power. And so the ego really is an indispensable ally. And if we recognize it as such, then it's easier to use it as opposed to suffer from it, you know. So
exactly. It's a wonderful ally. It's absolutely an ally, as you say. Well, that's great. I think there's a couple of nuggets there that I know I can certainly use. So thank you for that, Scott.
Hey, yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, this is good for me too. I need to be making notes on myself. So I just somebody send me notes on this when we're done in an email so I can read it.
We're recording this.
Okay, great. I'll have to listen.
Well, and here's my ego coming up a little bit to invite all of us to have a little more space and silence between contributions. This is a lot of fun, and I love to sink in into these messages. I had this image, and this is the eye, right, of the Martin Luther King Jr. and Joanna Macy, that Martin Luther King Jr. is saying, like, you don't need to like your opponents. You need only to love them. Because it is impossible to like someone that is abusing another human being, that is killing animals, is murdering human beings on the other side of the planet, that is putting in risk with nuclear weapons and energy and all this stuff for generations, thousands of years, like putting in risk the future of future beings. Like, you cannot like people doing that kind of thing. But when you talk kindly to the ego, said, you know what, I really appreciate it. I love, that's where the Joanna Macy enter here, is starting from a point of gratitude, then you honor the pain of the world, and then once there with new eyes, then you can move forward. She calls it, it's a spiral. So when you start with gratitude, even with people that are like that, and you say, thank you for taking care of us, and this is really not working, and if I'm feeling a lot of pain, and once you start flowing with those tears, then your eyes are washed and your mind is more calm, and then you can speak from the heart. And what is beautiful from this conversation, and I appreciate our sister's morning intention in facilitating this love coming to you, Brother Scott, is that it doesn't need to be happening with the brother. George Bush of the world, of the people that are killing other brothers and sisters, but is that within ourselves that we can start talking lovingly to ourselves, to that ego within ourselves. So thank you for allowing this pause to occur, and I feel very nourished by this. So just want to share that.
Right on. Thanks, Pancho.
Thank you.
Yeah, love is a verb. You know, I mean, we're taught that it's a feeling. And you have to like the people you love, and you really don't. You know, your love is it's an action done most powerfully for people you aren't liking in that moment. So that's a really powerful way to express it. Thanks.
Yes. Thank you, Pancho, as well. Scott, I'm curious to ask. since you go from place to place, community to community, with this intention of a service in every moment, I'm wondering how have you been received by these communities and the people that you serve? Can you, do you have like a specific story or something that can exemplify?
Well, you know, the first, most of the years of my journey, you know, I originally wanted to do this. I kind of did an experiment with truth for 2 years, lived on the street for 2 years, and made a real sociological experiment with myself as the only guinea pig on how far you can push kindness. And that's what started this. And I started realizing practically, without any needing to do any religious or spiritual work at all, that just practical psychology, love your enemy, works. That was a real mind blower for me back in 2004. And so I knew early 2005 I needed to somehow or wanted to share this message because, you know, I was pretty much living in a Borders bookstore, and there's a lot of books. Okay, it's gone now, but, you know, back then there's a lot of books in that bookstore. I was reading all of them in the psychology section, the self-help section, the religion section, and there was nothing on radical kindness and how it works. There was nothing on practical selflessness in any of the books. And I was like, man, you know, this is the greatest thing I've ever come across, and no one seems to know about this. Or, well, of course, all the mystics behind all the world religions knew about it. You know, a lot of people knew about it, but, you know, it wasn't really mainstream information. So I knew what I had to share, but I also knew that you can't just walk around the planet saying, I've got a great idea. Because, you know, we know what we do with folks that say that. You know, we turn them off. It's fight or flight. We think, oh, another loony. And I kind of look like a loony anyway. You know, I'm big and gangly, and I have a smile on my face all the time. And, you know, you can't just walk around saying, hey, I've got an idea for you. So I didn't know how to do it. And then I read the Peace Pilgrim's book. Actually, it literally fell in my lap, which is a story for another time. That's pretty cool. But and I read it, and I started crying because I knew this was it. Yeah. You know, she nailed something really powerful that if you have a truth of gentleness to share, the key to sharing it is getting people to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
And then the doorway is open. And the way that she did that was living this crazy life where on paper she should be dead. Right. But she was happy and living a full life and healthy. And I was like, okay, that's it. That's what I've got to do. So I thought I was going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went home and I told my mom and my stepdad, and I gave them a copy of the book, and I said, by the way, I'm going to start doing this. And my, you know, they were a little concerned, to say the least, less than thrilled with the plan. And they said, well, before you go, why don't you give a workshop on your principles that you've learned for my friends? And so I did that. I drew some diagrams. It was a really cool little day-long seminar. It was really a lot of fun, but I still thought it was only going to happen once. And then I thought, okay, that was a great seminar. 14 people came, and that was cool, but now I got to start walking. I got to be a peace pilgrim, you know. And then people started calling me. Hey, I got a friend at this church that wants to see the presentation. And hey, I got a friend here in Chicago. And hey, here's someone in Boise, and here's someone in Seattle. And for like 6 years, people kept asking me to go places, stay with them, take care of their pets and their houses and their gardens, and give these presentations.
Wow.
Yes, which was pretty. I mean, sometimes it was like crazy bizarre because the rule was, I had my own guideline that said, you know, you serve until the service is up, mm-hmm. and if no one asks you to serve again, then you go immediately back to the street where you are. So I was in Chicago in 2007, and it was early October, and my service there was up on October 18th, and I was like, great. Come on, God. Winter on the street in Chicago. You know, can I go back to Hawaii? You know, and I was like, okay, I'll do it. I'll go. I'll be homeless again on the streets in Chicago. It'll be fine. And, you know, the ego is not thrilled about living on the streets in the winter in Chicago. You can understand. Mm. So then a week later, after I opened up and let go and said, I'm just going to do it, you know, whatever, I'll do whatever, I get an email from someone I hadn't spoken with in 3 years. And they said, hey, we need somebody desperately on October the 19th in Hawaii. Like the day after, like seamless. And these kind of things happened for 6 straight years. It was bizarre.
Wow.
And so that was, to answer your how you received question, I mean, that was a pretty untraditional way to Peace Pilgrim. I still had no possessions practically and no money. I still served for free and still gave presentations. But the reception part of it was pretty easy because people were asking me to come.
Right.
Things shifted dramatically for a period of time. 2 years ago when I walked a pilgrimage, someone asked me to come to Southern Florida to do a presentation, a seminar, and she was broke. And I had given one for her 2 years previous, and it had been wonderful, and she had been wanting to ask me back, and she was like broke. And she knew that I didn't have any money. And she says, boy, it wouldn't be so nice, you know. And I was like, well, Bev, you know, I don't have anything planned. You know, when are you thinking? And she said, May. And I was like, that gives me enough time. I'll just walk. And I did. I left Chattanooga, Tennessee on April 10th. And I walked with, just like the Peace Pilgrim did, for 40 days. 27 walking days. I walked all the way almost to Miami. I got a few rides along the way because of some very interesting health challenges, which are all part of the dance when you're walking radical pilgrimage. But I did it with no money, and I didn't ask for food. That was another one of my rules, no asking for food. I just walked with my little shirt on that said Newman is Nomad. And that was very interesting, dealing with how people receive a scraggly 6'6 guy wearing a Numinous Nomad shirt walking on the side of a highway in the deep south. I mean, that was interesting, to say the least. And people were still kind. I would be dead otherwise.
Right.
I mean, it was a radical proof of the goodness of humanity.
Yeah.
Every day, somebody did something brilliantly kind, even though you could tell I made them reasonably very nervous. And, you know, seriously, you know, I'm sweaty and kind of smelly and I'm huge and I got the stubbly beard and I got either a look of pain or ecstasy on my face at all times or a mixture of both. And those are not the guys you want to come up and talk to, right?
Right.
But they did. Every day they did it. Every day. And just,
yeah,
it was brilliant. And so that was the other extreme of how you received. Anyway, I hope that answers that question.
No, it does. Actually, it's funny because it's making me think that because we experienced the same thing. Radical pilgrimage, as you call it, I have learned is an opportunity for others to demonstrate their kindness to you.
Right,
and,
exactly.
And in many ways, I mean, those of us, I think most of us here who are on this kind of call or in this kind of have chosen to live in this way, feel the need to be continually giving, to be in service, to continually try to make the world a better place. And I think, of course, we are doing it. We are doing it. And at times we forget to let others experience that same joy. And for me, that was definitely a challenge when I was walking, was learning how to receive and to allow others to give. And I think receiving graciously is just as much of a spiritual practice as giving.
Well, you know, receiving consciously is the greatest of gifts. I mean, that's when you really get to the top of generosity, giving and receiving literally become one, just like you say. I mean, I was receiving the occasional salad and French fries. But the greatest joy for me was, you know, I was hungry, okay, and I was terrified because my ego kept saying, you're going to die. You know, what are you doing? And so every little food I got, my ego was just rejoicing like nobody's business, you know. So, yes, I was happy with the French fries. That was a nice gift. But because I hadn't asked and so obviously enjoyed the French fries or the salad, I have never seen happier people in my life. They would buy me a salad. That's $2.50 at Burger King or something, right? And they would just be beaming. Because there was no way, obviously, I was going to be able to give them anything back. It was raw, unconditional giving, and they had to challenge fear to do it.
Yeah.
And then when they did it and broke through into what Jesus called the kingdom of heaven, then there they were, just at one with me. It's raw oneness.
Yeah.
And it is the bliss of blisses. And to see those people that happy gave me strength. I was like, okay, this is what it's about. If I'm going to give three people a day that experience, then I'll limp down the highway 5,000 miles, you know, and then I kept going. And that's what kept me going, was seeing that joy come to those folks from remembering how great it feels to give purely, you know?
Yeah. And it's a beautiful, I think, reminder for all of us as well to remember to allow others to do that. So thanks. Thank you, Scott, for that.
Yeah. Thank you. Great point.
Yeah. Do you find
Mm-hmm. You can go ahead with your question. I'm just going to mention that I'm turning the Q&A session on, and
all
you can hit *6 and just to be in the queue if you have a question. And Moni, you can continue, but I just wanted to give people time to join the queue.
Thank you, Kanchan. Yeah, I have so many more questions, but I'll just...
Yeah,
we can continue, I think, for hours, Scott, and... I know that we can. And I just want to just kind of ask the last question, which was related to the concept of kindness. And I'm wondering if you found that people are able to accept radical kindness. When you offer it, when you are doing, are they able to receive?
Well, you know, that's a very, very important question. Well, rarely in the way that my ego wants them to. And that's part of the dance. My ego wants them to receive my radical kindness and just see them awaken to the realization that they can live too this way, and then it just spreads like wildfire and there's no more war and hunger. Of course, that's what my ego wants to happen every time I do this. And, of course, this really never happens. Well, it happened once. That's a story maybe too long for this chat, but it happened once, and other than that, it just doesn't. It happens, everyone receives in their way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it looks like they're not receiving it at a place that your radical love got in there anyway and shook things up. Maybe that seed will blossom in 10 years in that person, and you just have to turn and go on to the next person.
Yeah.
So that really becomes a walk of faith, because the human animal is built to purposefully not recognize radical kindness. Radical kindness means loving the enemy, which the ego sees as determination of your gene pool. And all the ego wants to do is survive and procreate its genes. That's all it wants to do. And so radical loving the enemy means your tribe or your herd is going to die to the ego.
Yeah.
So when it sees anyone doing radical kindness, it likes to, as opposed to looking at the moon that person is pointing to, it looks for the warts on that person's finger.
Mm.
So I tend to have a lot of people then go out of their way to criticize selflessness, to criticize me, to or give me, attribute false motives to me and what I'm doing. And this happens a lot. I have people, I have lots of conversations with conservative Christians, many of them, hint that I'm going to hell. Some of them have said to me very frankly that I am an agent of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't, you can have compassion for this. This is just the ego's response to the thing it fears most, which is love, raw
mm-hmm.
love.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone responding this way knows that they too can do this, which is why being exposed to it, if we go forth and live radical kindness, it is going to shake things up. Because talking about it and reading about it is one thing, but to see someone who's living it, like reading the stories about Pancho, for example, you know, that shook things up. You know, when Pancho was hauled, thrown down by that cop, and then he turns to him and says, "I love you, brother." I mean, that just blew everyone's mind, right?
Right.
And not only do they get inspired by that, but it immediately calls for them to realize they can do it too if Pancho can do it, right? They can do it too if Scott can do it, and that is scary stuff. And so often what will come up is resistance, strong resistance. And so if you're going to walk this way, you know, it is a challenging road.
Mm.
And it will not bring the fruit that your ego wants, and that's okay. It's okay because love still works.
Right.
Love, peace wins. The more radically you practice it, the more it functions. It's just, you have to have faith that it's out there doing its business, you know, just keep on doing it. That's, I guess, the way I would respond to that.
That's a great way to answer it. Thank you so much. Like I said, I have so much more, but I'm sure we'll just leave it for another day.
Speaking of that, before we go to Q&A, if anybody does have anything they would like to speak with me about or email me about or question or anything, you know, I'm good to go for anybody and everybody all the time. That's what I do. So you can contact me per email, rediscoveringpeace@gmail.com, and I can call you from Germany, and we can talk on the phone just to let everyone out there know it's good to go from my end, even after tonight's call is done.
And you're definitely on Facebook as well.
This is radical kindness at its best, huh? And we'll just want to appreciate what you just said, brother, because one of the things that we do here in the ecosystem that I don't think you're aware of, maybe you are, but if you don't, you're going to like this very much, it's called Help Others. And there's this army of love magicians and love warriors doing acts of kindness. And maybe in the Q&A you can weave a little bit your the book that you, or the, yeah, it's like a little booklet, right, about like 365 days of the of the year doing,
oh, the selfless service calendar.
That is great, because that is the part of the small part that you can loving anybody. So maybe during the Q&A you can weave that, because that is totally aligned with the Help Others website, that we have thousands of stories of random acts of kindness.
Yeah, there's such a long list. I just I did that. I think that came out of me in an hour one day while I was in Hawaii, kind of in the middle of nowhere, house sitting for someone and taking care of their beautiful dogs. And that's, whoever wants that, that's online. You go to my website under the navigation button, writings, and then I think that's for download from the website online right now, if anybody's interested in that. So the website is inspiring. What's that?
I was just saying, you can send me all the links that you want to share, because after the call, I'll be sending a mail to everyone who will.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
Yeah. So we can just compile everything and send it. So
okay, I'll do that. Fantastic. Very good.
Yeah. Okay. So should we start the Q&A session? Pancho, did you have a question?
I'm sure. Like, well, as Moni was saying, we can be talking here a lot of things, but I just really enjoying, brother, seeing your radical kindness approach to food. And I've been noticing, you know, your what does it mean to be really kind in this day and age when it comes to our food? And that kindness is not a philosophy, but it's just a way of life, right? The thoughts that we have, the food that we eat, the clothes that we wear, the things that we do. And I just want to bring up the question that you saw this guerrilla gardening, this brother, Ron Finley, has been doing this in L.A., and that you already saw that. And actually, we featured that in A Daily Good. And you said, like, oh, actually, you know, I saw that in a response to a podcast last week that, you know, Big Brother is taking over our lives. Then you just say, like, oh, I came up with this new and improved bill of inalienable rights. And
that was cool last week. Yeah.
Cannot ever be taken from us, no matter what. So that is kind of like disobeying with great love. When there's this injustice, when there's this thing that doesn't make sense, we tap into that greater source of love and say, like, okay, I feel a little bit hopeless, but guess what? I'm going to tap that cosmic companionship and this radical love, and I'm going to disobey with great love. And one of those rights that you put there, it was about gardening.
That's right.
Growing your own food. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that was right number 8. Yeah, last week, every Saturday, I've been a guest on a conspiracy theory radio show from a friend of mine from Chicago. It's really fascinating stuff. And, you know, he was expressing concerns that Big Brother was, you know, going to bring us down. And all the Machiavellian stuff that kind of is going on, as far as law and some religion and big corporations are concerned. And so I'm listening to him say these things, and I'm thinking, you know, what something was welling up inside of me that was very positive, and it was like, wait a minute, this is true, and yet that's just the flesh. That's just the machine that those forces have control over. They can't touch me. They can't touch my soul. And so I started thinking, what are my inalienable rights? What are the things that can never be taken from me? And I came up with this. I just spit out this list. which was kind of cool. And the eighth one on the list, which I'd never written before, was gardening. And I thought, whoa, what a weird thing to say. But in all my travels around the country, even here in Germany it's starting, which is very interesting because the German culture really does not support this yet. But in the States anyway, I mean, downtown Chicago, community gardens in Seattle, my folks have a farm in Chattanooga, and it's just to see how much food can be produced on just a 3x3 plot of dirt is outrageous. And with the way our food, especially in the States, is being contaminated and regulated, growing our own food is going to continue to become a really important lifestyle shift. And in conjunction with that, which I think you just indirectly referenced, Pancho, for me personally, and I don't put this on anybody, I don't judge anybody's food choices, but for me personally, that includes vegetarianism. And because as the Peace Pilgrim, I had this weird journey with vegetarianism. I knew we weren't supposed to eat smart animals. And I was trying to decide which animals were dumb enough to eat. And so I just was checking them off. I was like, okay, pigs are smarter than dogs, so pigs are out. And then I started looking at cows, and I'm like, okay, cows are smart enough, they're out. And dogs, dolphins, elephants, out. And then I start reading about turkeys, and they're too smart too. And then I started raising chickens for eggs, lovingly, by the way, which is actually a lot of fun. And chickens have more personality than the average high school human. And they actually talk to each other when you watch them. And so chickens were out. And then it became clear when I read the Peace Pilgrim's book, she made it so simple. It's just, you know, I don't want to kill another sentient life form. And I'm not going to ask anybody else to kill it for me. So I'm not going to eat any. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's it. It is that simple. And because the more time you spend around animals, anything with eyes and a heart, and or a heart, which I guess includes worms, worms have hearts, you know, these things, there's something about them, they have much more of an awareness and a desire to live than we think, just as much as each of us do. And so now for almost 9 years, I've been vegetarian, and I've been posting a lot on Facebook for the animals, a lot of uncomfortable posts that have really upset quite a few people, actually, and I apologize to any out there who were upset by them, but, you know, I didn't really do them for the humans as much as I did them for the animals. But I think that I hope that is okay that I link that in there, Pancho, because I think that really is part of the same way of being that will help us awaken as a species. So
thank you. Reverend Henshaw is very also made a lot of reference about that. So thank you so much. It's just reaffirming that we're in that path. There's a bunch of questions over there, brother, waiting for you. I'm really curious to see where they are.
Okay, fire away.
First, Scott, I just wanted to say I love you. This is incredible hearing all the things from your journey and just your own insights. They, for lack of a better word, they just resonate so deeply with me. And I think
Thanks,
I'm
brother.
Going to try and take you up on having a phone call with you.
Cause excellent. Excellent. That'd be wonderful.
I'd love to dive deeper there, at least on a day-to-day level. I have a bunch of questions, but the one that I'll go with for now is, you know, in terms of when you come across these situations, whether it's facing your enemy or even when it's just this idea of you're facing yourself, which you can be your own enemy, you know, and your ego comes up and gets in the way, or even just your body starts, you know, having this, I need food, or, you know, I'm not going to survive these, I don't want to say demons, but these things keep coming up.
Yeah.
How do you overcome it, but do it in a way where you approach even that, your ego, with love? So that it's
that's a great question. I hear you, man. I hear you, brother. And I love you too, by the way. But I guess that goes without saying. But it's good to say it anyway. How do you deal with the ego in a loving way when you are feeling fear while you're dealing with it? And, you know, fear and love don't mix. That is tricky business. And that does take enlightenment, first of all, I found, is it's not a gradual process. That's a myth. You know, we keep thinking, you know, if I just, you know, 10 more years of therapy and I've got it, or just, I was a self-help book addict, you know, just one more self-help book and I've got it. And that's all just the ego keeping you from doing it. The one moment that you really don't want to be kind and choose to be kind anyway, you are enlightened. You've made it. It's over. Of course, the next moment you probably sink away from that and you get to go back again. And the same is true when we're in these moments just dealing with our ego and our fears or our anger or our sadness. And originally, you know, I would feel these things and I would immediately and naturally respond with, oh, no, or, oh, geez, here it is again, or, ooh, I really hope I can do it this time. And these are all natural and understandable responses. They're also at least partially fear-based and make it more difficult to respond consciously with love. And yet, the more you're aware of this, the more you can shift to, at some point, responding with, right on. And the great trick with that is you can use your physical machine, your body, to help your awareness, and the best way to do that is to smile. That's what I've found. Every time I'm in pain, you know, I kind of work physical labor, and I cut myself all the time, and I don't like cutting myself. I've always had an aversion to sharp objects, and so I get cut, and as opposed to cursing, which I used to do, which intensifies the pain, I smile. Or my coworker will annoy me with some passive-aggressive stuff because he's having a bad day, which happens once a week. God bless him. I love the guy. I really do. And he's just a brilliant button pusher. We've all got those button pushers. We draw them like magnets. And here he is, you know, my supervisor, and he can just, with just a wink, he can say, and I get to smile as the first response. And that gives me that half second to then turn my consciousness on and let my consciousness choose a response that is not from the ego. And the more you do that, that becomes a new behavior pattern. That does take time. That is kind of like a process, but it's still a moment-to-moment choice. But that's the best tip I can give, is approach those moments with a quick, sincere smile and maybe not a deep breath, but a half-deep breath, and then say, okay, I have every right to be mad, sad, or angry, or sad, or fearful, and yet, for just this moment, I'm going to try something kind. And then you do it, you know? And the more you do that, you get really efficient at it over time. It just like anything else, it really does take practice. I guess that's the best answer to that.
Thank you. Thank you
very much. Yeah, right on, man. Right on.
I practice that.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Pallavi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah. I can hear you.
Okay. Hi, Scott. This is a question for the Scott with a B. Thank you. This has been wonderful. And my question is, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about intuition.
About what?
And intuition.
Intuition.
Intuition?
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, in my life, I have experienced when I learn to trust it is when grace comes into my life. And I was curious about, you know, leave it open-ended, either how you tap into your intuition or anything that comes up for you.
That's a great question, how you tap into intuition. Yeah. First of all, I actually did a lot of thinking about this. Because the ego, God bless it, it seems like the further you go on this journey of making it a friend, the more clever it becomes. So my ego would, when it started realizing that I was really serious about this living radical kindness thing, it was having to look for new ways to convince me to rationalize selfish behavior. And one of the ways it did it was it would get me to misanalyze what intuition was. Because what happens with intuition is if you really open yourself to an experience or a situation or a moment, you always have that split-second gut feeling. And it kind of is, it's not only in the gut, it's also kind of around the heart. The more you think about this, the more you can actually physically feel it. And that is what I think is pure intuition. The tricky thing is a half a second after that, the ego will throw something on top of it that feels similar. And you can very easily stumble into calling that intuition and saying, oh, well, my gut feeling says to do this, when really that's a selfish or a self-centered choice. And the way I had to check it in reverse, because I really still am not very good at figuring out which of those half seconds I'm accessing, because it's almost impossible to consciously recognize. And so I've got to go in reverse, and I've got to say, okay, good, I've got these two choices. I've got hunch number one, and I've got intuition number two. And which one of them do I – Rumi says, you look at which one you're most afraid of, and that's the one you do, which I think is genius. So that's one way to be able to choose. I actually wrote an article about this, identifying nine different ways that you can use to actually figure out which of yourselves is speaking to you, which is actually pretty cool. And one of them is, which one am I most afraid of, and that's the one I should do. Another one is, which one brings others the most benefit? Another one is, which one brings me the least benefit? That sounds masochistic, but it's actually not, because when you consciously do for others with the least personal benefit, you're actually doing the most for your true self. That's kind of complicated, but I hope you get it. But the trick is, that's what I had to do, and I still have to do it. I still am fooled by my own quote-unquote intuition to this day. It happened yesterday. And then you have to stop and say, okay, let's really look at this. Let's look at what really potentially could come from this choice. And is there anything more kind I could do in this moment? And you really can make this decision in a number of seconds. You can tell. And sometimes you are accessing your capital I intuition, because it is selfless and it is going to bring someone else peace. Or at least it really looks like it is going to. And then you go for it, even if you're not sure. And sometimes you can say, honestly, wait a minute, that's really cozy, and I'm actually, I think, doing this for myself, which is fine. It's not bad. It's just there's something else much more peace-filled waiting for you in that same moment that you can look for and find. So that's the only answer I've got to that. I hope that actually does some good. That's a tricky one. That's a very good question.
Hi, this is Asha again. Thank you so much. You really inspired me to go back and do what I want to do. And
is this the doctor?
Yes.
Oh, I was inspired by you. I wrote some notes down for you.
Definitely communicate with you, because as this talk was going on, I sort of in my head already planned my first thing in going and helping in Delhi for the women issues they're having with rape. And so I already have a plan in my head that I'm going to put into effect right away.
Look at you. So, fantastic. How wonderful.
So I really thank you for that. But I definitely do have a lot of questions. And thank you again for putting me back on track where I always wanted to be. So God bless you for that. And I definitely love
welcome,
you too.
You're welcome. You thank yourself now. I was just sitting here. You did it. You know, keep that in mind. But thank you for that. Kind of you.
Thank you. God bless everyone.
Yes.
Thank you, Asha.
Thank you, Sid.
Hi, Scott. This is Noelle from Maine. And I would really like to talk to you some more also in the future. And thank you very much for your inspiring stories and what you've done and how brave you've been to walk your walk and live your life the way you are. And I just would like to make a comment about how powerful we are as people when we dig into ourselves and come from these places of our true selves. We can be powerful, and really, it is a little thing. It's the touching of the moment and one person, the spark. And people respond to love. They're afraid of it, but they also respond to it. They sometimes, without even knowing it, they respond to it. Like you said, it might come out later, 10 years later, but every little spark is implanted in there.
Yes, I found that to be true. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. It is. We've been taught that we're only one and we can't make a difference, and that is, if I'm allowed to say this non-judgmentally, that is a lie. That is not true. every, especially in the cultures in the West. I haven't done too much traveling in the East, so I can't really comment on those cultures. But especially in the West, the cultures are built around fear of stranger, which is a blessing in disguise, you see, because that means every small, quote-unquote, kind deed we do for a stranger has a magnificent effect on the entire region where you do that deed.
Right.
And that is something we can all take more advantage of. I mean, we sit at home and think, what's the use? What's the use going and smiling at one homeless person? Well, as a person who was home free, I call it home free, for 2 years, that one smile makes all the difference in the world. That one smile can save someone's life when they're on the street. Mm-hmm. And remembering this is very empowering, and the more of us that can act this way, even for just 2 minutes a day, we can really, turn the ship around. I really believe that.
I believe that, too. I believe in the hope of it. And a friend of mine who believes in this, too, has a 7-year-old son, and he believes in it. And I believe the children are being born to believe in this, and they
all
believe in it. They're born that way. And he said that this is our job. This is our real job. And we don't put value on these things. And, you know, we don't have a title for your job that you've been doing, but it is a job. It's our job in life to go out there and just
which is also a privilege. It's a job and a privilege at the same time. Yes, I say yes to that. I always tell people, they said, what was the best job you ever did? And I said, well, the best paying job I ever did was working with, abused children for a year in Hawaii. That was in an elementary school. That was by far the best paying job I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
But the best job I've ever done, capital J, is what I'm doing right now, which is just going every day and trying to brighten someone's day for 5 minutes every day. That's the job.
That's the job that we all have to do, all of us.
And no one can stop us from doing it.
Exactly.
Which is really a brilliant freedom we have that can never be taken from us, it's the greatest of blessings. I'm so thankful for it every day. It's wonderful.
Me too. And I think that the power is coming back into the people because of this. We're realizing this, that we have the power, not the institutions, not the jobs, not the titles, not the schools. We're self-educated too. It's not just that we went to Harvard. It's that we have been a learning throughout our whole life. Our experiences are a teacher. We are teachers and learners for each other,
Yes, amen to that. And we are. We won't see it if you watch the news. Even CNN seems to have lost it these days, God bless them. But if you watch your TV, you won't see it because, they get their money from us being afraid. God bless them. No criticism. I wouldn't trade places for anything. I guess I would if I could take their suffering from them that way, but, the point of the matter is, it is happening. It is happening. And if we go out into our communities and connect with people in these quote-unquote small ways, which are not small, we wake up to the fact that there is something really beautiful happening.
Yes.
Right under the nose of the quote-unquote people in power. It feels like an unstoppable wave to me. I'm very excited about it, frankly. I don't know where it's going to take us, and yet it feels like a very good thing.
I agree. I'm very excited too because I'm 62 years old, so I've been living a while, and to see the changes that have been happening and faster and faster. It's just growing larger and larger, and the more that we connect this way and talk this way, the more that we're getting it. And thank Service Space for providing this for us because they started this, and it really can change lives.
It's a brilliant service. It's good to have a reminder that it works. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Oh, Dick?
Hello?
Hi, Bodhik. Hi.
Hi. Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Awesome. This is Bodhik calling from California. Great conversation, Scott. Overall, love the life that you're living and encouraging others in small ways. I actually don't have a question. Earlier in the conversation, there was dialogue about love. And there was a quote that Mahatma Gandhi said, or that said, and that I came across. The quote to the effect is, where there is love, there is life. So, thank you.
Right on. Amen to that. Gotta love Gandhiji. What a guy. What a guy. Thank God for that guy.
Thank you, guys. I just wanted to check. So it's almost 10:30, and it's time to close the call. But I just wanted to check with Moni if she wanted to say she had some closing thoughts, and Pancho if he wants to say something, and then we can close the call.
No, my only remark would be to thank this gentle soul walking this earth named Scott, and to express my gratitude once again for him sharing his beautiful wisdom with all of us today. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Pancho?
Sure. Just to thank all the love magicians behind the scenes that made possible all this. From people designing this technology so that is available to a lot of people now, and to the people in the ecosystem. I know there's a lot of love monsters over there, and Manisha and Moni and Kanchan. And I usually sign off some emails and say, oh, well, this is perfect, I think. Here we go. It's a mix of Lao Tzu and another quote. So it goes like this. Kindness in words creates confidence. Kindness in thinking creates profoundness. Kindness in giving and receiving creates love. Kindness in silence creates unity. Therefore, the highest form of wisdom is kindness. So if you want to be a rebel, be kind.
Yeah.
So we're thrilled that Brother Scott was here sharing his space time with us and already making powerful facilitations on transformations of his fierce mirror of kindness and love to all of us. And the beauty of it is that we can all tap into that great silence, no matter where we are on the planet, business consciousness arising. So thank you so much for making the time. And right now, as we speak, we are embracing the planet with our love with this way. So thank you.